This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And we start today with Caroline Kitchener. She is the national political reporter for The Washington Post and has been working the vineyards of Louisiana on the biggest story in the world right now. I guess this and the 1-6 Commission are dominating all the national stories for good reason. But Monday, a Louisiana judge temporarily blocked the state from imposing its ban on abortion, the result of the trigger law that prohibited the procedure as soon as the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. The order followed a lawsuit by abortion providers alleging that the law, designed to take effect automatically if the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, is constitutionally vague. So a hearing is scheduled next week, and the clinics in Louisiana, the three of them, are presumably going back to doing business as usual for a few days, and we shall see. But 13 states across the nation have trigger laws on the books, and when the court struck down Roe v. Wade on Friday, ending the guarantee to a right to abortion in place for almost 50 years, it spurred some court action, as you would expect. And Caroline Kitchener is following this, and good morning to you, Caroline.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. What are your observations regarding where we are at this point?
Well, I think it's interesting that we've seen a few judges, both in Utah and Louisiana, block these laws temporarily. That's not entirely surprising, especially the anti-abortion movement was anticipating very serious challenges to these laws, particularly because, trigger laws are, we haven't really seen that before. A law that goes into effect once something happens, like a Supreme Court ruling, there wasn't a whole lot of precedent for that. So they were anticipating this. It's part of the reason why many states have multiple abortion bans on the books. So in case one of them gets struck down, they can turn to the other. But really, from everything that I'm hearing in Louisiana, this is not expected to be blocked for too long.
Well, that means this could be a furious dash to clinics for women seeking abortion services in Louisiana, because right now a woman, if things go as they are expected to, will have to travel more than 600 miles to receive abortion services available in other states that do not have trigger laws. And so it's a case in which I can imagine the clinics are quite busy right now. But This decision, based on the leak of a month or so ago, was not unanticipated, but nonetheless, people are stunned by it. What are your observations? You were in Texas last week, then in Louisiana. What are you hearing on the front of this searing issue right now, Caroline?
Well, I was in Texas in a clinic that had to immediately stop providing abortions as soon as the decision came down. And I'll remember that scene for the rest of my life. They were just gathered, the whole staff of the clinic. There were women in the waiting room, and the staff was just gathered around this computer looking at this decision, just moments after it came out, just stunned. Nobody really knew what to say. And then, finally someone said, look, we have women here. We have, 20 patients on the schedule today. We need to spring into action and figure out what to do. And so, one by one, they started delivering the news.
Caroline Kitchener is our guest for a little while. Our number is, for us, is 877-217-5757. If you'd like to speak to this fine reporter, the national political reporter, she covers abortion at the Washington Post. And before joining the politics team, she wrote about women and gender for The Lily. She's written for The Atlantic, The Guardian, Vox, Wall Street Journal, and her nonfiction book, Postgrad, Five Women in Their First Year Out of College, follows the lives of five women in their first year after college graduation. She is an established reporter. You've covered many of these issues through the years, and this one in particular, and it is a remarkable turn of events. And a lot of the pieces had to be in place for this to happen. Mitch McConnell had to block Merrick Garland. Ruth Bader Ginsburg had to die. Donald Trump had to get three appointees who were guaranteed to vote this way, even though they indicated they might not. It is amazing how in just a matter of a few years, all the chips fell in place for those who were bound and determined to overturn Roe v. Wade, Caroline.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's really been a decades-long effort from the anti-abortion movement. They've been incredibly organized and, you know, like I said, incredibly determined. You know, it's really been a 50-year march to this day.
And we're talking largely states in the South that have these trigger laws. And there are some, of course, in the western part of the country, but we're not talking about California, Oregon, or Washington. We're talking about states that Donald Trump carried mightily, Wyoming, for example. But he also carried, as we pointed out here, the 11 states that are in the Southeastern Conference. He carried them twice, with one exception. Georgia in 2020, by the closest of margins, went to President Biden. But nonetheless, there is an enormous political component to this. This is the judiciary that ultimately made the decision, but it could not have been accomplished, Caroline, without enormous political clout that was attained through, as you say, years and years and years of trying to make exactly this happen.
That's true. And many of the anti-abortion leaders that I talk to really credit President Trump and say that it's all because of him, because of these promises that he made to appoint anti-abortion judges, which, you know, he did, three of them. And it really comes down to that.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. So a listener asks about pharmaceutical abortions, which are now a majority in this country. And a few weeks ago, we visited with the person who runs the Hope Medical Clinic in Shreveport, which went back to work immediately after this temporary injunction, Kathleen Pittman. And she said that this is only done in the first few weeks of a pregnancy. We're talking primarily the first month. It's done without any surgical procedure, and it can be done, of course, at home. How will the new laws affect that process? It would seem to be a bit hard to watch the mail and make sure that pills are not received by people who are trying to get them in a case of needing some kind of pregnancy termination. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, medication abortion can be used within the first 10 weeks of pregnancy. And, you know, it's banned just like anything else. So, you know, the bans in places like Louisiana, they cover both surgical and medication abortion. Now, there are, you know, many online pharmacies that are offering abortion pills illegally. And that is something that's really expected to, you know, we're expected to see that skyrocket demand for pills online.
A listener also asked, Caroline, who's the national political reporter who covers abortion for The Washington Post, asked about the Texas law that has been in effect. It is the most extreme of all the anti-abortion legislation ever. Can you give us the components of how extreme it is as far as how far it goes in trying to thwart abortion, minus Roe v. Wade being overturned?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Texas law was pretty remarkable. It took effect in the fall. And, you know, while, you know, 10 months, it held for 10 months while Roe v. Wade was still the law of the land. And it, you know, it banned abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is before most women knew they're pregnant. But, you know, now Texas, there's a pre-Roe ban that was, you know, on the books prior to 1973 that has now taken effect. And, you know, now all abortions are banned in Texas.
Edwina on Perkins. Edwina, we'll hit you before we go to the break. You're on with Caroline. Good morning.
Good morning. I just have a comment. I believe the overturn was horrendous, but two things that bother me too, is that they violated the Supreme Court, you know, principle that, you know,
precedent.
Right. So that means, you know, everything could be overturned. And the second thing is that they ruled a lot broader than they needed to. They didn't rule on the question before them. They, you know, just expanded it. I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
All right, Edwina. We are about to go to a break, Caroline, but I do recall Justice Kavanaugh, when he was confirmed and asked about Roe v. Wade, he said it was precedent on top of precedent, and he was right. But Roe and Casey are no longer the case based on this decision from the high court, with Justice Samuel Alito Jr. writing the majority opinion. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Caroline Kitchener of The Washington Post after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Caroline Kitchener of The Washington Post with us for a few more moments. If you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. Before we went to the break, a caller, Edwina, asked about precedent, and the court, of course, went against two precedents. Two previous cases had made abortion available in most pregnancies through two trimesters, I guess, all pregnancies through two trimesters, but that precedent was thrown out the window. Justices often say they adhere to precedent, and one of those is John Roberts, but he could not convince his other conservative cohorts to go with him. Caroline, your thoughts about whether John Roberts has lost control of his court?
I mean, I think it seems pretty clear that it's Thomas's court with this decision, and Alito's court. And, you know, I think there was some hope on the abortion rights side that the Chief Justice would be able to sway more justices into his corner. But, you know, ultimately that, you know, just wasn't able to happen.
Now, I've read various stories from major news entities describing this case, and as it happened Friday, I saw some saying it was a 6-3 vote and others saying it was a 5-4 vote. Which one was it?
Well, it was a 6-3 vote to uphold the Mississippi law, which banned abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. But it was, you know, Justice Roberts did not concur with the decision to reverse Roe v. Wade. So,
on the big one, it was 5-4. And so if Amy Coney Barrett of New Orleans had not replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg, then obviously this would not have happened. And that shows how one person can make a huge difference on a 9-person court. Jane and Baker, you're on with Caroline. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been curious about a couple of things since this Roe v. Wade decision. One of them is... where does the HIPAA law come into play? Because it seems that nobody would really know that a lady's pregnant until she starts showing after several months of pregnancy. And to expose all of this information about her seems to violate the HIPAA law. Before you address that, though, I was surprised at this decision because the Constitution does say that all men are created equal. And I don't know of any law that tells men what to do with their bodies. So it seems like this is discriminatory on some level. And the final thing is, with all these women and men demonstrating in front of the Supreme Court and other places, I think it might be advisable for all of them to wear pillows in front of their bodies so nobody knows who's who. Thank you. I'll take the answer off air. Bye.
All right. Well, Caroline, we know people are intense on their reaction to this, and your thoughts about what will happen next. Obviously, this happened because of politics. Will this spur political activity in an election that's coming in just a few months?
Well, I think that's the big question that everybody's wondering. Is this going to be a big mobilizing issue for the Democrats? And then on the other side, I'm hearing, you know, the Republicans are really hoping that this turns out their base. So I think You know, that's going to be the question that everybody is trying to answer over the next weeks and months. How, you know, we're going to see, I think, a lot of Democrats using this issue in their campaigns, in their ads, and, you know, we're going to see how effective that is.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, and we hope we have occasion to talk again soon. Obviously, you are an authority on this issue, which has become, and I guess we can leave it with this, polls have shown that before this decision that this was not a major issue any longer among many Americans, but now it's right there, top one, two, or three, Caroline.
That's definitely true. That's definitely true.
Thank you very much. Good to talk
Thanks.
With you. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And now joining us is Melissa Flournoy, former head of Planned Parenthood in Louisiana. And
well, hey, Jim. Good to be with you.
Head of Louisiana Progress, and she's involved with a few other groups. And we talked with her last about guns, and we will do that again. But since then, the world has changed. And we have these two big issues that are in the forefront right now, abortion and guns. And then yesterday, the court made another decision on religion. It is a case in which there is a social war going on in this country. There is no doubt about that. And it is a case in which, Melissa, something that was thought to be the law of the land forevermore is not. And as I talked with the reporter Caroline Kitchener from The Washington Post, a lot of pieces had to fall in place for this to happen, but they fell in place. Most notably, they can take credit for it. And they are taking credit for it, by the way, Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell. But is this the end or is this the beginning? Your thoughts.
Well, it's great to be with you today, Jim. And, you know, this is the culmination of a strategy of the last 40 years. This goes back to Ralph Reed and the Christian Coalition and a resurgence of the power of the right evangelical Christian nationalist movement. And it's just over the last couple of decades, it's gotten even more extreme. So, you know, I don't think we're at the beginning. I think we're sort of in the middle. And I think the next decade will really play out on the modern world of what kind of country do you want to live in? How do we sort of see the future? How do we value individual rights and diversity of religion and thought? So, you know, we're at, I think, a real pivotal moment for the country.
It's a pivotal moment. But in Louisiana, as I've noted, Donald Trump won in Louisiana twice by 400,000 votes, received 85% of the votes from white people twice in our state. And we're a pro-life state, but I don't know that 85% of the white people are in favor of this decision. But it was Donald Trump who made it happen. If Hillary Clinton had been president, this would not have happened. No way it would have happened. But
well, you know, that's why, Jim, when we say elections have consequences, people need to understand this is what we mean. You know, elections have consequences on big issues. And so right now, I think the country is going through sort of a sorting of on ideas and ideology and really a sorting on the past and the future.
Now, David in St. Francisville writes, Jim, I watched a woman on the Don Lemon show last night say the Democrats are okay with abortions up to delivery. And David continues, I think it's important to convey that Roe had limitations. And even your friend Quinn Hillier has said Democrats are in favor of abortion on demand up until the moment of birth. Is that right?
No, that's just, it's really ridiculous. I mean, it's the fear mongering and misinformation of the far right that aggravates me so much. You know, abortions in our country have continued to go down over the last 20 years. You know, we really have seen a decrease in the number of abortions. There actually was an uptick in abortions during the Trump presidency, and they've continued to go down again under the Biden presidency with access to health care, family planning, contraception. So nobody wants to have abortions till the end of a pregnancy. Now, I will tell you one thing. that the reason that I am so avidly pro-choice is that my mother in 1963 was pregnant with a child right behind me with a fetal abnormality that was so serious that her obstetrician in Carthage, Texas, suggested she have an abortion and said, I know a doctor in Shreveport who will do it because this baby is not compatible with life. And my mother carried that baby to term. It broke her heart. I don't think she ever got over it. And so, yes, there are reasons to have later term abortions. Most of that is around fetal abnormality, life of the mother, and other issues. And so, you know, I think we need to center this as a healthcare decision and not as a religious decision.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Melissa Flournoy. We're back after this brief pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. One of our favorite guests, Melissa Flournoy, is with us, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Let's make this brief. We've got several callers in line, but if you can make your remarks and questions brief, less than 30 seconds, that would be wonderful. By Gayoku in North Baton Rouge, you're on with Melissa.
Thank you very much. I believe if Mr. O'Connell, meaning the chairman of the president of the Senate at the time, the leader of the Republican Senate, had not prevented Obama from having another representative on the court, and it is clear that the decision to overturn Roe would not have passed.
Well, it was essentially a one-vote margin, and you're right. Instead of Merrick Garland, we got Neil Gorsuch. Instead of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died within a month of the election of 2020, we got Amy Coney Barrett. So if either of those had gone the other way, this would not have happened, Melissa.
Yeah, I just want to address the hypocrisy of Mitch McConnell. I mean, if anything makes my brain explode, it's Mitch McConnell saying that President Obama could not appoint a Supreme Court justice within a year of an election. Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies basically, you know, at the end of the term, and they rush Amy Coney Barrett through within 30 days. I mean, just the lack of consistency, the hypocrisy, and the bold use of brute force power at the state and local level by the Republicans is what aggravates me the most.
Would Democrats have done the same thing if they had had the opportunity?
I think Democrats, no, because I just don't think Democrats understand power, frankly, Jim. It aggravates the hell out of me. I think Democrats would have nominated the Supreme Court justice the first time because we believe in rules and we believe in customs of the Senate. And, you know, the Democrats are going to have to put on their big boy pants and figure this out because we're getting our ass kicked because we just do not understand power. And we don't understand how the public works, and we don't understand the level of, nobody, you know, it's like we saw it in redistricting here in Louisiana. The Republicans in the state legislature didn't care that a federal judge said draw a second map. The level of disdain, disrespect of federal law.
Well, and there are many, not all, but many, including every member of our delegation who's a Republican other than Bill Cassidy, are challenging a legitimate election of 2020. A landslide win by Joe Biden, by the way, an election that was not even close. And yet they're saying,
you know, this is brute force politics, Jim. They've got the talking points. They have message discipline, and they know what the game is being played. I think of all of our congressmen, the one I'm most disappointed in is Garrett Graves, because he has a smart wife and he should know better. And, you know, some of these other guys, you know, I would write Clay Higgins off in a heartbeat. But, you know, it's really about party discipline, and it's not about what's good for families. It's not about what's good for Louisiana. Well, it's not about what it's good for, you know, improving health care or making families safe or improving the safety of neighborhoods. You know, this is really about a political ideology gone wrong, in my opinion.
Well, if we end up with a congressional district that is just Baton Rouge and a few of the surrounding parishes, that would make it a leaning blue district rather than a solid red district, because North Baton Rouge is taken out of the current one. I would say you're right that if Carissa Graves ran against Garrett Graves in a legitimately drawn district that wasn't gerrymandering, we would have Congressman Graves, and it would be Carissa Graves, not Garrett.
I think that's true.
I don't think there's any doubt, and she is an amazing person, and that makes me think more of Garrett Graves. But on the political front, he is to the right of Clay Higgins, and as we know, Congressman Higgins is pretty far out on that right flank. Patrick in Innisfail Distinct.
It's a political calculation. It's a political calculation. You know, I have to believe that.
Okay,
I mean,
well,
I started his career as a Democrat with, you know, down the bayou with, you know.
All right, let's get some callers in. Patrick, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Morning. 1865, I remember a lot of Dixie Democrats were upset their rights were being violated, their property rights. They failed to realize the right of the slave to his life and his freedom. And you could say the same analogy with abortion. You people fail to see the right of the unborn baby's right to life. Do you think 150 years from now, Democrats will blame Republicans for abortion?
Melissa, your thoughts about Patrick?
You know, Patrick, I think he missed the analogy. I think the analogy is that women are now being treated like slaves. I don't think this is about unborn children. I think this is about controlling the access of women to women's health care. And so, you know, that's the part that upsets me the most. And you know, let's talk about contraception. Let's talk about sex education. Let's talk about family planning. You know, let's talk about male responsibility. No woman in the modern world, with the exception of the Virgin Mary, has ever gotten pregnant without the sperm of a man. So let's talk about male responsibility. You know, let's make it against the law to have sex without a condom. You know, let's make it free vasectomies. Let's talk about unborn children. You know, let's talk about both halves of this equation. I'm so tired of everybody putting the burden on women. You know, they're not getting pregnant by themselves. I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, and that is another misconception, that being in favor of abortion rights doesn't mean that those who are in favor of people having abortions. It's basically the right to have one. If somebody chooses to.
The people who think abortion should be legal are the same people that think we should have access to health care, are the same people that think that we should be talking about family planning, have access to long-acting reversible contraception. They're the same people that want to have comprehensive sex education and health education, to talk about consent and bodily autonomy, to reduce child sex abuse, to reduce human trafficking, to reduce unwanted pregnancy, to reduce date rape. Okay, we need all of the people who are against abortion and the pro-life movement to join forces to talk about access to health education, family planning, and sex ed. That would deal with a lot of the issues around sex abuse, child abuse, issues around bodily autonomy. You know, it's amazing what our young people don't know about their reproductive health. I want to eliminate the need for abortion, except for in extreme circumstances.
Melissa, you're fired up. Let's see if we can get a few callers in and read a few emails as well. Here's one from Thomas Wright, a very long one, but I'll read just a bit of it. He says, since Justice Kavanaugh, Mr. Wright says, lied during the confirmation about his feelings on Roe v. Wade being settled law, he believes that he lied about other things when he was being questioned. Why do we even have these confirmation hearings anymore? They're obviously just window dressing, and these people are going to say what they have to say and not say what they want to say to get the job. And that's true of Democrats and Republicans. What are your thoughts about whether the Senate Judiciary Committee, which became a travesty 30-some years ago, 31, when Joe Biden was the chair and allowed Anita Hill to be slammed up one side and down the other by Orrin Hatch and by Arlen Specter, and didn't do a damn thing about it. That was Joe Biden, by the way. Why do we even have these hearings?
Well, I think in the Constitution, it provides for the advice and consent of the Senate for the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. And so it's in the Constitution. And for people who love the Constitution, like I love the Constitution, you know, I want our government to work. And so I think these hearings are important, even if it is political theater. But I do want to say that the point you made is really valid. If we had listened to Anita Hill, if we had understood sort of the character of Clarence Thomas 30 years ago, I actually don't think the Judiciary Committee should have approved him to be put on the Supreme Court.
Well, the vote, by the way, on the Supreme Court for Thomas was 52-48. Senators Breaux and Johnston, two Democrats from Louisiana, voted for him. Joe Biden, Democrat from Delaware, voted against him, but did not allow three corroborating witnesses of Anita Hill to testify. And it was never pointed out that Anita Hill passed a polygraph test and Clarence Thomas declined to take one.
Listen, Jim, I always believed Anita Hill, and I believe Ms. Blasey Ford, who talked about Kavanaugh, and there were a lot of other women from Yale and other places that talked about Kavanaugh. I don't think Kavanaugh has the character to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court used to mean something. You know, these were people of character, of leadership, former governors, presidents, senators, you know, law school professors, people of high intellect, high moral character. You know, that's the country I want to live in, with smart people who care about the Constitution, who believe in the vision of America to be our leaders. And we have just trivialized our politics and are really slowly destroying our country because we don't believe in competence. We don't believe in leadership. And there is no vision to bring our country together in this very critical moment.
Well, we're going to talk about guns as well, but we will spend a few more minutes on abortion, and we will take a few callers. I do ask that you keep your questions brief. But President Biden on Saturday did sign the most sweeping gun violence bill in decades. It was a bipartisan compromise that seemed unimaginable until a recent series of mass shootings, including the massacre of 19 students and two teachers at Uvalde, Texas, Robb Elementary 5 weeks ago today. Now, the vote, by the way, had 193 people in the House against it, including Congressman Graves, Higgins, Scalise, Letlow, and Johnson. We'll talk more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. James in Metairie, you're on with Melissa Flournoy. Hi, James.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Jim. Good morning to your guests. I know I want to talk about Clarence Thomas, but we don't have time. Time is short. I heard this yesterday. The anti-abortion laws, like the ones we have here in Louisiana and Texas, with no exceptions for rape and incest, it's government-forced pregnancy, so evil and cruel that a young woman who was raped by her father will be forced to give birth to her sister.
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it, but James is right, Melissa. That's the law of the state of Louisiana right now.
Yeah, and it just makes me so sad, Jim. I mean, we've just lost our way. We've lost all sense of compassion. We've lost all sense of perspective. I think even the governor, who's very pro-life and his wife is exceedingly pro-life, said, hey, we need rape and incest, life of the mother exceptions. You know, there's this case over in Tangipahoa where this older guy raped a girl when she was 16 and then got custody of the child later. I mean, we have lost our way, you know, and so I just really firmly believe that we need to focus on prevention and reproductive health care and responsible decision making by young people, both male and female, to reduce unwanted pregnancy. But in the cases of rape and incest and sex trafficking and exploitation, it's just beyond cruel to force a young woman to give birth to a child if she would like to have an abortion.
Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on with Melissa. Hi, Mitchell. Good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Jim. Good day to you all. In the Bible, the young lady, Rachel, God gave her a choice whether she lived or her baby lived. So she chose to die and her baby to live. And I'm just telling all the young ladies out there, just try to go on that point and it make it work out for you. And God bless everybody.
All right, Mitchell. David in Atlanta. David, you're on.
If it wasn't for Senator McCain's one vote, there'd be no Obamacare right now. So that means there'd be no maternity services for women who have been raped to have their children. It shows you how insensitive, cruel, selfish, and mean the Republicans are.
All right. Well, I would imagine now if the Supreme Court had Obamacare in front of it, they would declare it unconstitutional. Remember, it was a 5-4 vote last time, and the court was configured much differently than it is now. I would imagine they would vote differently on same-sex marriage. Melissa, your thoughts?
Let's just talk about Clarence Thomas for a minute, because he did write part of this, the opinion that was the concurrence that was so frightening to me, because he basically wants to make abortion illegal. He wants to look at the whole right to privacy, and he specifically mentioned the Griswold case from 1965 that made it legal for married people to use contraception. That's the first time that the Supreme Court talked about the right to privacy. And the other cases that are built on that are around birth control, but also the Loving decision that made it legal for interracial marriage. Because, Jim, I don't know if you remember, but interracial marriage was illegal until 1967. And Clarence Thomas is a black man married to a white woman. I don't know if he's going to overturn his own marriage or not, but the inconsistency and the hypocrisy of this is just chilling.
All right.
Because he wants to use the same logic.
All right, let's get
LGBT
to some callers.
Rights.
Ann on Jefferson Highway. Ann, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, this is a comment, basically. She said that, hello, Melissa, you said that elections have consequences, and that is why it is so important that the public listen to the facts presented in the January 6th hearing.
All right, and please turn your radio down when you call back in. Pam says at his emotional confirmation hearing, Brett Kavanaugh said, Democrats, what goes around comes around. Is this payback? That's from Pam in Denham Springs. Melissa?
Oh, gosh. You know, this is what has me so upset, that our politics are so toxic. You know, we are not in junior high, Jim. You know, these are life and death decisions. This shouldn't be about, you know, yanking the girls' pigtails on the playground sort of politics. You know, we need the grown-ups to step in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and save the country from the extremes that are pulling us apart. I firmly believe that most people in our country are competent, sane, good people.
All right.
People of faith and character. And we are just allowing ourselves to be shredded by crazy politics.
Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, it seems like for the last 50 years, for the first time in history, women had the right to self-determination. You know, for time immemorial, women have been forced to wear burqas, be in harems, into arranged marriages, been told we couldn't have a job, couldn't have an education, we've been insulted with feminine terms being used as insults, been paid less than men for the same job, you know, paid twice as much for the same T-shirt as a guy.
All right. It is a case in which women have a chance to make a difference at the ballot box in November. And there are those who feel just as passionately on, quote, the other side. And in this issue, there aren't two sides. There are about 42 sides. But, Melissa, if this doesn't energize the Democratic base, I don't know what will.
Well, I don't think what the Republicans are counting on is that it's going to energize some Republican women, too, to turn on the Republican Party. Because let me tell you, there are a lot of Republican women who are pro-choice, that are donors to Planned Parenthood, that support access to abortion rights. I remember when Barbara Bush and George Bush were supporters of Planned Parenthood in Houston. So, you know, I'm hoping that this can turn the tide and stop some of the right-wing, far-right extremist stuff. And we need people across the political agenda to vote with their brains and not with their emotion.
Well, it just simple math indicates that about 40% of American women have at some point in their lives had an abortion. And in Louisiana, about 80% of the white women voted for Donald Trump, who is responsible for the Supreme Court negating the right to abortion. So there are some people, you, I think, are correct, who may at least think twice about how they voted. I don't know. We'll find out. Now, on the gun front, that's the last time you were on the show, 10,000 moms. How's that one going?
Well, you know, 10,000 women, we started a letter campaign. I think we're over 2,000 signatures. We sort of are trying to be sort of slow and steady. We wanted to see what the federal government did. I want to give a shout out to Senator Cassidy for voting for the bipartisan gun bill. He's the only Republican from Louisiana that did so.
A bill that does very little, by the way, a bill that is basically window dressing.
Well, it's not really a gun bill. It's really more of a mental health bill and community violence.
But yeah, but we couldn't even get Graves and Scalise and Letlow and Johnson and Higgins to vote for it, or Kennedy. They all voted the other way.
You know, because it's really sort of a first step, and it doesn't take guns off the street, but at least it's a step in the right direction. You know, we still think very strongly that citizens shouldn't be carrying around semi-automatic military-style weapons.
All right. So,
we're trying to get a specific gun dealer, Lipsy's LLC, to consider limiting the sale of semi-automatic military-style weapons. And we know that that's a long shot.
All right. Well, they are, as you noted on this show, the biggest gun wholesaler in the world. And the gun that was purchased in Uvalde came from Lipsy's in Baton Rouge. And that doesn't mean that.
Well, now, Jim, I do want to clarify that, because I don't know if we know that for a fact or not. Okay. So I do know that Lipsy's is a distributor to the gun store.
Okay. Well, then I appreciate you doing
that. But I do want to. I did get a letter back from the Lipsy's, and so I'm being expressly careful about the facts that we know.
Okay.
And so I do still want to enter into a conversation of good faith with Lipsy's to consider common sense options about the regulation or use of military-style weapons. And we are still accepting signatures to the letter at 10,000 women.
All right. Well, you made a good clarification. Lipsy supplies weapons to that store. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but they do supply weapons to the store where the young man. But that doesn't mean that the company is culpable. I agree with that. It is a legal operation. Nothing illegal about it. But some big entities like Walmart have dispensed with selling assault weapons. But what did the letter say?
It basically expressed their business interest. It was a very thoughtful letter, and I'm sure written by an attorney. And so we're continuing to reach out to people who know the Lipsy's, and hopefully in the next month or so, try and have a sit down meeting with Mrs. Aronson or someone else from the company. But, you know, we want to be thoughtful about this. Lipsy's is an employer in our community. They are philanthropic leaders, and this really is an issue of corporate responsibility and good citizenship for us. And so we think, since Walmart and Dick's and other retailers can make that decision, if Lipsy's made a decision about semi-automatic military-style weapons, it really would disrupt the supply chain.
Well, we invite anyone from the Lipsy family or operation to be on this show. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet.